this time of year is filled with traditions, from the food we eat to the songs we sing and even how we gather with family and friends. Are holiday stories part of the fun for you? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to tell some tales inspired by the holidays is storyteller and theater artist Paul Strickland. Welcome back, Paul.
Thanks, Lucy. It's always great to be here.
Always so much fun to have you in the studio. Storytelling around the holidays has been a tradition for ages. Ghost stories were popular this time of year in Victorian England. I'm almost afraid to say that to you for fear that you'll have a jump scare waiting for me somewhere. But what holiday storytelling traditions are most meaningful for you?
I mean, I think that any opportunity for people to get together in person and sort of share stories, you know, one of the things that happens in a lot of my shows are about these things called the one-abouts, which are stories, you know, it's a photo album within the show and within the stories. It's a photo album that doesn't have photos in it. It actually has index cards. And on each index card is the words, the one about, and then the rest of the title of that story. And the idea is that at random, you pull one of those and that gives you a prompt to tell each other stories. So I think there's this wonderful thing. It happens at the end of the year. So you are reflective, but you are also anticipating all of those New Year's resolutions that you plan to break by February. So then you also have that going on. And I think it creates this simultaneous forward-looking hope and sort of past-looking nostalgia that's really, really nice and human.
Ah, like the one about is kind of like the white elephant of storytelling.
I think so. Yeah. Certainly in my world. I mean, that is the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's such a fun thing. You don't have to worry about somebody not, it doesn't fit. Like, you don't have to worry about the wrong size.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and so often the case, you know, one of the lines that I've been playing with in a song lately that is this idea that the gifts we give and that we leave with are just forgettable stuff. But the things that we carry with us for decades are stories.
Well, that's the perfect segue into a story. And I understand you have a holiday story that builds off the tale of everyone's favorite snowman.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, my Aunt True and my Uncle Faults live in a trailer park called Big Fib Trailer Park Cul-de-Sac. It's a very different trailer park than the trailer park I factually grew up poor in. I was born in a small Alabama town called Pensacola, Florida. And when I go down to visit Aunt True and Uncle Faults for the holidays, every year Uncle Faults is sitting on his living room reading toilet. When I walk, he has a toilet in his living room because it's the only chair he's ever been comfortable reading on. And so he's sitting there and you walk in and he just jumps into a story. That's how he is. There's no hello. It just starts. So he just looked up at me and he said, "Hey, let me tell you about Frosty the Snowman." Aunt True immediately jumped up and said, "Oh, well, honey, I hope you like your conspiracies with a side of theory." And so he started. Frosty the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul, Uncle Faults. But was he jolly and happy, or is that just what he wanted us to think? See, I think that Frosty the Snowman is the abandoned runt child of the Yeti, and his mama was a snow cone machine. And his Yeti daddy didn't want to talk about it, which is why to this day we still refer to him as abominable. So, according to Uncle Faults' version of the story, Frosty the Snowman was rejected by his community and was searching for his snow cone machine mother in this village with a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal. Well, it doesn't say that he was built by the children, does it? No, it doesn't say that. It says he had a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal. That is a sophisticated disguise. So Uncle Faults believes that Frosty was in search of his mother, and the story continues. Frosty the Snowman is a fairy tale, they say. He was made of snow, but the observant know that he ran for his life that day. So there must have been some magic in that old silk hat they found. For when they placed it on his head, he began to dance around. Which is just a nice way of saying panic, run in place. Okay. Frosty the Snowman was alive as he could be, and the children say he could laugh and play just the same as you and me. It says that he could laugh and play. Does not say he did. Says that he could. See, I think if you spend some more time on a seminal text like this, you will find some interesting things. I've been told that sitting on this living room reading toilet, spending hours studying this text is an unhinged waste of time. But I'm here to tell you, it can't be unhinged unless it was a door to somewhere interesting in the first place. Thumpity thump thump, thumpity thump thump, look at Frosty go. You know, this thumpity thump thing is a really fun way of saying that he was just leglessly hopping fearfully away from a group of children who had just inadvertently divulged his true snow cryptid identity. Frosty the Snowman knew the sun was hot that day. So he said, let's run and we'll have some fun now before I melt away. Y'all know he didn't say that. Down to the village with a broomstick in his hand, running here and there all around the square, saying, catch me if you can. If you believe Frosty said any of that, I can't help you. That is obviously what the kids said later. And also, you should not trust anything in this text to be factually accurate. They needed it to rhyme. Also, I just want to point out, it says that he had a broomstick in his hand. He led them down the streets of town right to the traffic cop, but he only paused a moment when he heard him holler, stop. Have y'all noticed how many of these old Christmas stories have law breaking in them? You got like grandma hit and run by a reindeer or whatever, and you got Santa voyeuristically watching you while you sleep. That's a little weird, ain't it? I reckon it's illegal to jaywalk, so it must be illegal to jay-thumpity-thump-thump-thump. So Frosty the Snowman had to hurry on his way, so he waved goodbye, saying, don't you cry, I'll be back again someday. Yeah, he waved goodbye with his hand. And now, I just want to say something here, and what it might be is pretty controversial, but I don't think anything in this story is based on a factual event. I think this whole thing is probably a sneaky allegory for something real important. You think about poor Frosty the Snowman. He was in disguise on the holidays, searching for family that may exist after being rejected by family that does. There's a lot of folks during the holidays have to be in disguise like that, have to be searching for family like that, have to try to stay as solid as they can for as long as they can, have to try to not turn into a puddle in front of everybody. Some folks get lucky and get born into the right blizzard, and some folks don't. But whichever one you are, I hope you find yourself among people this holiday that don't make you feel half anything. I hope you spend your holidays with people that make you feel whole.
I heard no Christmas carols as I walked down the street. I heard no Merry Christmas from people I'd
meet. Do you think all Christmas stories in some way are a sneaky allegory for something hidden, like you've shown us with this take on Frosty?
I mean, Uncle Faltz has a sneaky way of doing it, doesn't he? I suspect so. I suspect that most of these stories started based on some sort of factual thing that happened, and then kind of were a fairy tale was sort of crafted around them. And then that fairy tale is what has survived and lived on. And it's our job to find ourselves inside those stories.
Well, that makes a world of sense to me. We'll hear another new holiday tale after a short break. And later in the program, the story behind a local Christmas Eve song that might just become one of your new favorites. This is Cincinnati Edition.
Turn blue. Christmas ain't Christmas, dear, without you.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with storyteller and theater artist Paul Strickland, who's sharing some new holiday stories with us.
Christmas.
Paul, you mentioned your aunt and uncle at the top of the show, but can you tell us a little bit more about them? Because some of our listeners might not be as familiar with your family as others.
Yeah, so my aunt True and Uncle Faults, they live in this trailer park called Big Fib Trailer Park Cul-de-Sac. And it is a trailer park way, way down south. It's down there off the coast of Factual. In fact, if you leave Factual and you head due south, you will pass Big Fib on your way to Bald Faced. And obviously, if you get to Bald Faced, then you have gone too far. Big Fib is a really beautiful place, though. You know, it's the kind of place where people have had to get curiously creative. And that is why it is such a wonderful place. There are no screens to speak of down there. Like, there's no phones or computers or whatever. And that makes sense when you think about it, because why would you purchase something for your entertainment that's less entertaining than your neighbors? Uncle Faults will tell you, listen here, why would I buy another flat square entertainment object? I already got this here window. You look at that thing right now, you tell me, what does Netflix have? What does Netflix have that's more interesting than Kevin in his wooden vest? His mama told him 52 years ago, knocking on wood was good luck. So he got to whittling, and now he wears that wooden vest every day, rapping on that thing like the world's weirdest woodpecker. I'll tell you right now, son, I am stitious. That out there is superstitious.
Well, I feel like we know them much better now. I appreciate that. And I know you have another story for us. Is this one courtesy of Ain't True?
This one is courtesy of Ain't True. And this is a new story that I actually learned from her this past Thanksgiving holiday. So I want to share this with y'all. Thank you so much for letting me do that.
Sounds like it's going to be a bountiful feast of a story.
It's a fun one. Okay. It's called Catch and Release Shoplifting. And I was asking her about the Christmas holidays coming up and the thing you need to know, when Aunt True was a little girl, she first moved to Big Fib when she was 5 7/8 years old, because she's very interested in math. Uncle Faults always says, listen, first time she told me she's 5 7/8 years old, I thought, well, wherever they're from, they must measure years in socket wrenches. So, you know, Big Fib has one industry that still exists. It's one of those kind of small towns, right? They still have the Big Fib pea punching plant, which is, of course, the factory where they punch peas until they're black-eyed. But other than that, there's just little things. There's like a lady that cuts hair in the kitchen of her trailer and jokingly calls the place Mullet Over, but that's not really a business. That joke had gone out of style, but it's back now, which is nice. When Ain't True was about 9 years old, what happened was she started realizing that all the kids at school were talking about getting gifts for their parents for Christmas, and she had no idea what she was going to do. And there were, back in that time, lots of businesses in Big Fib, little tiny business. Oh, I mean, there was this little shop. This is what Aunt True was telling me. There was this little shop where they had, like, curiosity eggs, like little eggs, and it was called What in the Shell. And the thing is, he'd teach his chickens to love the taste of things, and that would affect the quality of the egg. So, like, the chicken would eat fireflies, and then that egg would light up intermittently from inside. Or, like, he'd teach his chicken to eat chameleons, and then that egg would just change colors to whatever you put it on, right? And I tell you, in the 70s, hippies just, they bought those out. And then he'd also teach his chickens to love BBs. And then he'd hard boil those eggs, and you could rattle them, and so they were making really good baby rattlers. Oh, and he had some prank ones too, like stink bugs. He had chickens that ate stink bugs, and then you'd throw those as far as you could. Well, so there were all these other shops. Papa Squat's Store of Sorts was a shop, and there was Miss Pat, who had like a place called Reincarnations, which was tire shrapnel. Like, when a tire exploded, she would take all the bits and pieces of rubber, spray paint them, and make it into a beautiful bouquet. And there were all of these little shops all around town, but Aunt True didn't know what she was going to do. Well, the thing was, I knew if I asked my parents for money, they would know that I was going to buy them a gift. So that wasn't going to work. And the next day when she was at school is when she learned about Robin Hood and about double negatives. And I had an incredible idea. I thought, well, what I'll do is I will steal something for my parents for Christmas. And then when they ask me where I got it, I'll lie. And so the lie will be a negative and the stealing will be a negative, but I'll give them a gift and that'll be a positive. You know what was going to ruin my Christmas? Not nothing. Okay. So Aunt True immediately set out on this adventure. And as she was doing this, she was stealing an egg from the curiosity shop. She was stealing some stuff from Miss Pat's shop day after day. Oh, it was the 13 days of pilfermas for me. I was having a wonderful time. And I was making friends at school by bragging about it. Well, what happened was she went to school and started telling everybody about her shoplifting. And all the other kids started doing it, too. And it created this fad around Big Fib, all the kids stealing gifts for their parents. But as is often the case, you know, kids think they're getting away with everything. I mean, I'm 46 years old, and I just found out this past Thanksgiving, my dad knew about something I thought I did that he didn't know about when I was 7. So I'm almost 40 years later, I got caught, right? This is exactly what, oh, we all thought we got away scot-free, and I don't even know who Scott is, but he wasn't there, so we didn't. And the thing is, the parents started getting together, talking about this thing that was happening, and then on December 23rd, they would go, and they got all of the gifts. They found all of those gifts, and then they started marching the kids around, giving gifts to the shopkeepers. The gifts they had stolen from the shopkeepers were just presented back to the shopkeepers as gifts. Catch and release shoplifting. And that is how the tradition in Big Fib came to be. And it's a tradition basically up until about 15, 20 years ago, whenever the economy got so bad in Big Fib. People would do that. I said to Aunt True, I said, don't you think it's a little weird that you're teaching kids to steal? And she said, what? Honey, we're also teaching kids to give, ain't we? I mean, that's the thing about it. Every parent has to sit their kid down at some point and say, honey, listen to me. Catch and release shoplifting ain't exactly real, but the spirit of catch and release shoplifting is alive and well in all of us. But Paul, I think it's true that you can give gifts to people that they already have. Like you can say, hey, I like your shoes. Or you can say, hey, you've got a really great smile. Or most importantly, I think you can say, hey, you're a really good listener. Thank you.
Big Fib must be a beautiful place.
It's a wonderful place. It's a wonderful place to go visit any chance you get.
Well, Paul, you know, you've just given us these new holiday stories. Are there any other classic stories you're hoping to put the Paul Strickland spin on? I guess I'm wondering, do you have the Grinch or White Christmas in your sights for years to come?
I mean, we'll see. We'll see how these things go. You know, I definitely have been doing a show recently that has a new tradition with Deck the Halls. And the 12 days of Big Fibmas are cool. You know, on the first day of Big Fibmas, my uncle gave to me a taxidermied alligator wreath and 5 black-eyed peas, for that matter. So, yeah, so there are a lot of these traditions that we will visit in the future, for sure.
So exciting. Well, I appreciate your wrapping up this year for us, but I know you've got some exciting stuff coming up in January. If anybody's been listening to you and thinks, I want to have an Aunt True and Uncle Faults of my own. What can they do?
Yeah, so if you go actually to tellstoriesbetter.com, you will see some opportunities. I'm teaching some workshops in early January. I've also got a January cohort. So these workshops that I'll be teaching through tellstoriesbetter.com will provide you with tools and a system that allows you to kind of make some method around your madness.
Exciting. It's tellstoriesbetter.com.
Tellstoriesbetter.com. And you can find my weekly free newsletter there, as well as workshops and cohorts and things of that nature.
Well, we'll make sure we've got that link up on our website.
Thank you so much.
WBXU.org. Well, I have been talking with storyteller and theater artist Paul Strickland. Thank you so much for your time today, Paul, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays. It's been great. Thank you, Lucy.
Up next, stuck in Caldy's during a Christmas Eve snowstorm. We talk to local musicians about the late, great Katie Lauer and the making of a Christmas classic. This is Cincinnati Editions.